Well, this is my mom, Nelly.
Yay, yay.
Say, welcome to the podcast.
Welcome to my daughter, what?
Podcast.
Podcast. Okay.
Podcast. I know, podcast. That's a weird name.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. It's Lisa Alvarado with Find the Funny Podcast. My guest again, I am excited to have my best friend here, Sarah Laspisa.
Yay!
It's Sarah! And it's also Christmas!
Merry Christmas,
you
everyone!
Guys, is everybody getting... What do you want for Christmas?
What do I want?
Yeah, what do you want?
World peace.
Oh, brother. You're not trying to be some modeling queen. Are you going to be Miss California? Yeah, there you go. I want world peace. Although it would be really great if that war stopped.
Yeah, I think it's hopeful. So
yeah,
hopefully by the time we're talking, you know, there's like a real ceasefire and whatever.
Right. I actually was supposed to do a military tour that went to Egypt and Saudi Arabia for like 3 weeks.
Right.
And it got canceled. And I am heartbroken because I think now more than ever, the troops really need humor.
Yeah.
Like it's such, I'm so bummed, but I'm already working on having them hopefully reschedule it for sometime in 2024.
Yeah.
Hopefully summertime things will have calmed down by then.
We'll just pray for peace.
Yeah. Yeah. Those troops need dick jokes. I mean.
Pray for dick jokes.
Yes. I know. All right. So we were talking earlier about material that may have gotten me fired or offensive. And I have another joke that I do during the PG show, which is also a double entendre. It's, I talk about my son being young and how he picks out cereal. It's not by the taste, but it's from the toy inside. Uh-huh. So they always have a picture of a movie or a toy.
Right.
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 So my son loves all the Toy Story movies. So we get this box of cereal. He's in the cart and he wants to open it up. I'm like, whoa, whoa, we have to pay for that. And so he disobeys me anyway, rips it open, and he starts screaming, I want a Buzz and a Woody, a Buzz and a Woody. And I'm like, that's how we got here in the first place.
And that's so hilarious.
That joke sometimes gets people angry too. And I'm like, okay, a kid is not going to know what a Buzz and a Woody is. And if they do, it's still not, I'm not going, so you take, you know, this and you do that, you know. But the adults get it and the kids get it.
Yeah.
And then I tag it. I never used to do this, but now that I'm more advanced as a comic, I tag it with, do you guys have any idea how difficult it is to write a joke for the adults and the kids?
Yeah.
And then sometimes they'll laugh at that. And then I go, nailed it. Yeah. And I celebrate on stage. I pat myself on the back, which actually kind of gets them to yes and you.
Right.
Because I'm proud of the fact that I did a joke for both.
Right. And then you say nailed it.
I'm like, nailed it. Literally. Good one, Spitz. I haven't even thought about that. Yeah. So, That is the last complaint I got was the giraffe joke.
That is just amazing.
It's unbelievable.
I mean, I feel like people just want to complain. That's all that is.
Okay, wait. I got one more. I got one more. It wasn't necessarily a complaint, but this is something that has really been bugging me lately is that people get offended for another group of people. It's not even you.
Yeah.
But I'm going to get offended for other people that they're not even talking about me.
Like you were saying with Dana, offense adjacent or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, offended adjacent. Like it's not even about you, but it is about you.
Right.
Because I feel like people tend to get offended because one, they want to feel like a good person.
Mm.
Like I care about this other group that's being marginalized. So I'm going to be offended for them.
Right. Yeah.
So here's the joke. True or false? Polar bears actually have black skin. It's true. And I say they actually do have black skin, but they grow white fur so they don't get pulled over.
That's so great.
Okay. Like, I love that joke. That's one of my favorite jokes in my PG show. And the funny thing is when I say that, the black people usually really appreciate it and really laugh.
Right.
Because I'm calling attention to something that is a problem.
Right.
You know, that is actually true.
It's a reality.
Statistically true.
Right.
Okay. No one can dispute that.
Right.
You know who gets offended? 9 times out of 10, it's a white person. They're woman. Like, oh, you know, and I'm like, what? Are you offended because I'm talking about you? That this is what you would do if you were a police officer?
Right.
Like, why? If they're laughing.
Right.
And then I usually tag that with something like, it's statistically correct. I mean, you can look it up. It's science, everybody, you know? And then once I start tagging it, they'll usually lighten up, but not always. Uh-huh. And sometimes I had two black women up to me after my show and they were like, thank you so much. That was our favorite joke.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
But the fact that you called attention to it.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
Yeah.
And in the same show, two white people were offended. They were like crossed arms. They were like, huh? Like, you know, it's if they were like, that's not right. You shouldn't talk about that. That's not right that they're treated that way. But I'm like, yeah, it's not right. That's why I'm making a joke about it to call attention and make fun of the fact that that's so sad to me that that still exists.
Right.
And that's comedians' job is to actually bring light into the darkness.
Right.
You know, make people aware, kind of challenge their thinking, but let's all laugh about how fucked up things are.
Yeah.
Instead of just complaining, let's have a conversation, let's laugh, let's call attention to it, let's have a discussion.
Yeah.
And we try to take some of the pain away from that by making fun of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's coping mechanism. Like another thing that happened recently that you know is my mom was just in the hospital for almost 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was close. I didn't know if she was, you know, going to make it home. She was really, really ill. And in that, I was a mess. Like I actually couldn't do my last show. Because once I found out, I was on a ship when I found out in the middle of the sea that my mom was in ICU. Mm. My brother took her in because she had a fever, she wasn't eating, and she seemed like she was very dehydrated. Turns out she had this infection in her blood and it was affecting her organs. It was really scary. So when he told me the test results, thank God we were going to be on land the next day. So I had a show at 10:30 at night that I was preparing for. Like I had showered, I had done my makeup, I wrote my set list, and I'm closing this show and I couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. I fell apart. Like when he told me that she had become unresponsive in the hospital, I thought that I might lose her while I was on a ship.
Mm.
I couldn't even call because it's like $6 a minute to call. I called anyway. So I think T-Mobile is going to be charging me $700 this month for phone calls. But long story short, that's the first time I've ever actually turned down a gig right before the gig. I've never done that before. I've had to postpone because I was really sick or something like that. But never, I just didn't go on stage right before a show. They understood. And I was a mess. Like I was bawling. I was shaking. So then when I left and I was there with my mom in the hospital, she actually, after not being responsive for a while, actually opened her eyes when I whispered in her ear. And that was like such a miracle. You know, it was such a blessing to have her open her eyes again and to be there. She, you know, they put her on really, really strong antibiotics. She started to heal up, but now she's home now and she's recovering, but she's still very, very weak. Like she being in a bed for that long, she lost her ability to walk. So she's now using a walker and she's trying to regain strength. But, you know, she's also 88. And
God bless her heart.
I know. I'm so lucky to have both my parents mm-hmm. still alive. Yeah. I mean, it's shocking. You have, your mom is how old?
Oh, geez. 1940. So 83?
Like 80, yeah.
83? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she's in pretty good health.
She is. She is. She has circulation issues, and but she does like try to work out and walk. And
yeah.
She still travels. So yeah, she's coming here.
I know.
Yeah. Little, in a couple of days.
Italian mama.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of pasta when she comes over.
Exactly.
The kitchen smells amazing.
So it's, she's doing really good. I'm impressed. But yeah. I think more and more, like she even drives still, but more and more she's like not driving, which I kind of like.
Because, right.
You know, so yeah.
It's when we get closer to our 50s, around 40s to 50s, that's when a lot of our friends are going through this of either losing a parent or another.
Right.
And or having to make the decision about, do you go with putting them in a home, like an assisted living sort of situation?
Yeah.
Or can you or other family members all pitch in and take care of the parents?
Yeah.
Well, being Latina, a home is really not an option. I
right.
mean,
yeah,
it
same
is
thing as Italian. No.
But it's all about the kids.
The kids take care of the, the kids just take, it's like, yeah.
Right. And I have three brothers. And for the past 10 years or so, I've been the one to take care of my parents.
Yeah.
Primarily. And I moved my mom out here. I moved my dad out here. And I've been caring for them separately because they're divorced, which is insane that I have to hang out with them and they don't necessarily want to hang out with each other. They both have health issues. They're both in their 80s. But it's kind of weird how a lot of this falls on the shoulders of the women of the family.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, and it's not that the guys or the brothers or the sons don't care for their parents. I just feel like there's this more compassionate side to women and strength at the same time.
Yeah.
Like women are caretakers when it's not easy, like we are with the children.
Mm-hmm.
The men are supposed to be the providers, right? And the women, not that they stay at home, but they're more nurturing.
Yeah.
And the men are more, they teach the life lessons and teach them sports and school and, you know, but they're not quite as, what's the word for it?
I think you kind of said it.
Nurturing.
Like it's that nurturing, like, you know, I mean, there is definitely, you know, like generalizations and all that. But for the most part, like guys think about, it's like how you've said a couple of times, you know, guys tend to be fixers. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, they
right.
see a problem, make a solution.
Yeah, but they're really great fixers.
Right. But they also are terrible, like when they're sick because they don't know how to even take care of themselves. Like
sometimes,
like, you know, it's, like women are usually like more into that like long-term like.
Yeah, like we push goal. Out a baby and then we're like, okay, what needs to be done?
Yeah, exactly. and we think more like long-term like that, like big picture kind of thing where guys are just like, show me the problem and I'll fix it. And yeah, it's a generalization, but I think that has to do with the nurturing, a little bit with the nurturing because women have that way of just thinking big picture.
And I think that there are some men that are raised in a household of women that are really have more of that compassion, nurture side because they're surrounded by it. So that's how they grew up. So they're more aware of it. Whenever I date a guy that's been raised by a single mom and has sisters and it's like a very feminine household, they're almost always compassionate. caring, like a little bit more than a guy that was raised like in a more male dominated household.
Right.
You know, and I like that. I mean, at the same time, I like the manly stuff, you know, like the tough guy. But at the same time, it's just so nice to have someone that understands emotions and can speak on that level and not roll their eyes, you know, or not want to talk about how they're feeling. So basically, my coping mechanism is to make jokes. Mm-hmm. And it's not because I think that the situation, like my mom being in the hospital and potentially losing her life, is not funny to me. But if I focus on the silliness of the things that are happening around me, then it helps me cope better with the pain of what I'm going through, because you can double down on the pain and think how horrible this is and what am I going to do? And like, you can just start to spiral down, because there's nothing, we're all going to die. There's nothing I can do except pray for her. You know, I can't cure it. I can't give the doctors more knowledge than what they have on how to fix things. There's there's nothing, you know? So then I start writing jokes, and even my friends are like, how are you coping? Have you found anything funny in it yet? You know, because it's fresh right now. She just got out, so it's fresh.
Right.
Usually it takes me a little while to heal. To start to heal, and then I can start making jokes. But I started. So, I mean, I had to have the very uncomfortable conversation with my parents of, because I want their wish to be fulfilled at the end of their life. Do you want to be buried or do you want to be cremated?
Yeah.
You know, and that's a really, it's something that I had to look into as a mom, so that my son doesn't have to make that decision. I want my death to be as easy on the people that I love and not burden them. Mm-hmm. So there's so many questions that you have to ask, and you don't want to ask it because you don't want to make them think like, oh, you're going to die tomorrow. Because you don't want to put death in their head, even though they already know it, they already feel it, but you're saying it out loud. Almost yes ands the fact that, yeah, you're going to die. So it's so delicate how you do it that I try to make it funny. Like, so when I talked to my parents, you know, I was like, do you guys want to be buried? Do you want a coffin? Do you want, I mean, because we were raised Catholic, Latino, that's kind of the thing. But I also was like, you know, there's other options. And I told them, before they even answered, I said, I want to be cremated. You know, like, that is my choice. I don't want the financial burden for my family. Even if I were to pay for my burial plot, I just kind of feel like, well, I'm worm food. You know, like, there's, no one's going to unbury me and, and look at my bones.
Me too.
You know, unless I'm in a sitcom or a murder mystery, then maybe, but, and also I'm a donor. Are you a donor?
I don't know if I officially signed up, but I mean, I should, I know I should, you know, isn't there like a, I have the sticker. Yes. I said I'm a donor.
Yes, then you are.
Okay, is it just a sticker?
I have the sticker. It was
just a sticker that you put on your...
Yes, but that's an official sticker from the DMV where you fill out paperwork saying, yes, I want to donate my body, you know, to science and or to help others. So that's even worse.
Yeah.
Why do I want to give up any of my organs or have them cut me up and then try and put me back together... And put me in a coffin.
Zipper you up and then like just exactly. have your face.
Like, don't Dexter me. And then put me in a box. Like, don't, like, I don't want my head like severed, or like you have to put, staple it back together, or, you know. You know, I know there's parts that no one's going to want my flat butt. It's not going to be donated, guys.
They might want your teeth.
Yes. Well,
You go to
they,
gummy.
They won't want the fillings though, because I got the silver ones from when I was a kid.
Yeah, those are bad for you.
You know, so So I was making jokes with my parents talking about cremation. And then they both, my mom had to talk to our pastor to make sure that she's not going against her faith or what God wants. And the pastor was like, yeah, it doesn't say anything in the Bible about you being cremated and not being able to get into heaven.
Right.
Because it talks all about the spirit leaving the body.
Right.
So then she felt better. She was like, okay, then I'm okay with cremation. And my dad said the same thing. He was like, I'm okay to be cremated. Yeah. I'm like, wow, that's both of you. So now you guys are going to have to fight it out like Fight Club to see who ends up on the mantle. Because I only have so much room.
Right.
You know, and who really wants it, guys? And I'm going to make an Amazon list of all the gifts I want. Like, so I had to present it in this way of like,
yeah,
how do I say it to them where it's not like has this gravity to it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And even in the hospital, when my mom was in the hospital, she couldn't get up. She couldn't walk. She was too weak. And she was hooked up to all these tubes and stuff for the medication and the IV. And so they gave her, I didn't even know this, the medical advances nowadays, it's unreal. Like, it's unbelievable what they what kind of things that they have in the hospitals now. Mm. Like the catheters, remember how horrible and painful and embarrassing those things were?
Yeah.
So now they have catheters that are outside the body.
Wow. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So it's like this tube and it's hooked up to this like basically small bucket, right? And the tube goes on the outside, but it has suction. So when you use the bathroom, there's this thing that's a tube that has like a, it seems like a pad or a mesh part. So when you pee, it goes, it's like an airplane toilet.
Oh my God.
So you pee, it's like, so you literally hear this thing sucking your pee away from your skin.
Wow.
Instead of sticking a tube, you know, which is, it's really painful. And you can also get an infection because, and you have this stranger making you spread eagle.
Yeah.
And like, it's... The things that they have to do in the hospital, I have so much admiration for these nurses.
Yeah.
Because the doctors come in, they tell you what's wrong, they tell you what they're going to do.
Yeah.
And they say, this is the plan. And then they walk out of the room.
And
the nurses are the one that bathe you.
Yeah.
They wipe your shit.
Yeah.
They put the catheter in. They deal with people getting sick in the bed. And they have to have this compassion of you being in pain. They're the ones that do all the IVs. The doctors don't do that.
Right.
They just come in with their coat and their little mask on and they're like, give her so many cc's of this. I'm out. You know, and they drop the mic and they fucking leave.
Yeah.
And it's the nurses doing, I have so much respect and admiration. They should be paid more. Even in the hospital, when my mom had this outer catheter thing, I did some of that for her because it's embarrassing to have
a stranger.
Yeah. And some of the nurses were men.
And
so this guy came into the room and I was still with my mom. It was like 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
And he wanted to change it out. And my mom looks at me like, please help.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and he starts to take the, and I was like, whoa, I got this.
Yeah.
Either you send in a woman or I can do it. Like I'm a mom. I've cleaned up a lot of stuff.
Right.
And I have no problem. And I just looked at my mom like, are you okay?
You could tell.
With me doing this.
Right.
And then she's like, you know, she nodded yes. But then again, I have to bring in humor.
Right.
To help her.
Right.
So, you know, I'm undressing her and I'm like, don't worry, I'm going to buy you a drink. And, you know, so I'm making it like, hey, this is a great Tinder date, right? Like, and she's giggling through it, which makes it tolerable for both of us,
right?
You know, because it makes me uncomfortable too. And I want to make sure I do it right.
Right.
So that she doesn't get any sort of infection on top of what she already has.
Right.
But I don't want her to feel embarrassed. That's the power of comedy. That is why I love what I do so much, because it helps painful situations.
Yeah.
Be something that you can stomach, that you you can look at the same exact situation, which has to be done, and it's a little lighter.
Yeah.
You know, it's not.
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah.
By the way. Yeah.
You want me to do a catheter for you?
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Sweet. Two for one. I mean, we'll get a group on.
I mean, you know, like, that's what I love so much about comedy and why I am like fascinated by what you do. And just love like seeing you come up with, and like, you know, I love the art, you know.
Me too.
I wish I was better, you know, like, you know, it's kind of like that, like a little envious, but like in a good way. It's not like a bad way. Like, I wish I had that talent because it's really special.
Well, your talent is laughing at the college. Sarah's got the best laugh. Like, she's got the best laugh. And you do appreciate really good original comedy.
Yeah, I really like smart comedy. And, you know, like you were saying, the double entendres, like the hidden humor, like even sometimes like dark stuff, I think is really fun and funny.
Yeah.
And yeah, like when you're talking about death and whatever, I mean, it's like those moments where you're like grieving, and the laughter through the grief. It's just like an explosion, you know, a release. It's a way to release your pain, you know?
Yeah, it's such a great coping mechanism.
Yeah.
And then there's people on the other side of it where they think it's completely inappropriate to joke during a painful time or a somber time.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't know if there's anybody better than Gilbert Gottfried at... lightening a situation that was very traumatic. I mean, it doesn't always, maybe the timing is really important, but I love that there's so many tragedies and stuff that he's talked about, and lost work and lost respect from people. And I'm like, you know what? All he was trying, I felt like, and I've watched interviews with him, he just seemed to have such a genuine heart in doing it, to really just take away from the pain and not make fun of necessarily the people going through the pain. But I mean, his balls in joking about 9/11 or tsunamis, it just was unbelievable to me. I think I'm going to bring back a joke that I used to do that was really controversial. And the reason, it's not because I want to continue to be controversial. It's because it's actually a great joke, in my opinion. It's makes people think, it pokes fun at, and it makes something that was really serious and offensive silly.
Yeah.
And we can kind of laugh about it, because it was something that actually hurt me in particular. And I wanted to address it. So, and the problem with this joke and why I stopped doing it is because Trump supporters wouldn't let me get to the punchline. Here's the joke. Okay, I talk about, this was actually before Trump even took office. Remember when he said that thing about Latino immigrants being lazy and rapists?
Right.
Okay, so the joke says, you know, I don't care who you voted for. Like, if you want this person or if you want that person in office, it doesn't bother me. Whatever your opinion is or who you like, choose whoever you want. The only thing, the reason I didn't like this candidate is because he called Latino immigrants, which both of my parents are Latino immigrants, he called them lazy and rapist. One, don't do that.
Right.
And two, you know what? Don't be greedy with your insults, okay? Because we're either lazy or we're rapists, but you can't be both. I mean, Sarah, have you ever seen a lazy rapist? They're not lazy. They're not, right. These guys work out. They got a squat in bushes. They got to run after you.
Right.
Like they got to be in good cardio health. You know what I mean? There's no laziness to grab somebody and abduct. You know, they got to rent a van. That's commitment. They got to put stuff on their credit card. They got to have a basement. In addition to their regular living situation, they got to build it out, make sure that the windows are there. There's a lot of work in that. Like, so when I would be on the stage, I would sit on the floor and I'd be like, hey, lady, no? All right. That's a lazy rapist right there. Right. I'm like, hey, no? All right, maybe tomorrow, you know? And so I think, and then sometimes I would tag that by making it even more personal. Like, I get that Trump thinks that, you know, Latinos are lazy rapists, but my mom is very committed. Like, when she rapes, she really, really gets into it. You know what I'm saying? Like, she really makes sure she has the kind of tape. She's compassionate that doesn't, like, rip off the hair. She really plans it out. And so the more and more I went with it, usually the audience got with it and would really laugh, but there would be some people that were just stuck on the terms. Either Trump was the term that they didn't want to hear about, or the word rapist.
Right, right.
Would catch them off. And they would say, some people thought that I was making fun of rape.
Yeah.
And that is not at all what I'm making fun of, because I don't believe there's anything funny about it. I was making fun of the words that he used to describe people that
immigrants.
I love.
Right, exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's not just Latino immigrants. There's so many immigrants, but he singled us out.
Right.
And it's just, are you kidding me?
Right.
Latinos are the hardest working
yeah.
people.
Right.
They're the ones that do the jobs that people that have money.
Right.
Don't
exactly
want to do. And it's like, how are we the lazy ones?
Right.
You know what I mean? So it was about that. But people who just hear a word and want to get angry hated that joke.
Yeah.
I think I want to bring it back. And one of the reasons, it's not to be controversial, but it's because, one, I like the joke. And number two, I haven't put it on a comedy special yet.
Mm.
And he's running again.
Yeah.
So.
And there's a good chance.
If he wins or if he doesn't win,
yeah.
He's going to be on TV. He's going to be, mm-hmm. you know, doing more speeches and more things. And so I think that it would be appropriate to bring it back.
Mm-hmm.
So we will see if I get canceled, you guys. This is something you're going to have to tune in and see if I get canceled on this one. Speaking of offensive words or having to be politically correct, this is a bit that I'm working on right now. I remember talking to a friend of mine and saying how in Los Angeles, it's been hot through September, October, but like in the 80s.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't even have that hot a summer, but it just went long.
Right.
And I go, this is the most amazing Indian summer. And then I was like, oh, are you not allowed to say Indian summer?
Yeah.
Have you ever come across that where you're like,
is this not okay appropriate? Anymore?
Like, everything's changing so fast.
Yeah.
Like,
Like,
it's not stewardess, it's flight attendant. People are going to get upset if you, it's amazing. So now I'm working on a bit where, okay, is Indian summer, is it inappropriate? Because there are things where I do think it's inappropriate, like an Indian giver, not good.
Yeah.
That's not good. That's derogatory and it's not good.
Yeah.
Okay. So like, instead of Indian giver, what should we call them? Which should we call them? We'll call them Uncle Sam. Cause who is a group that gives you money or gives you something and then takes it back?
Yeah.
That's Uncle Sam.
Okay.
Yeah. That's the government.
Right.
Okay. So another term where they use this is sitting Indian style.
Oh. Yeah.
So is that now inappropriate?
Probably,
right?
Yeah.
I mean,
that's hard to say.
It's hard. Like, I think it's not PC to say that anymore. So now instead of saying sitting Indian style, you have to say sitting with your legs crossed. Right. Okay. Well, then are you marginalizing another group? Like people with lazy eyes. I mean, it doesn't stop. That's my point. So lighten the fuck up, you guys. Right. Like, these are jokes. Everything's going to be offensive if you look for it.
Yeah.
I just recently did a writing session with my friends, Brian Kiley, Dana Eagle, and another person that's in my writer's group is Karen Rontowski. These three comedians are not only brilliant comics, they're fantastic writers. They write smart, great jokes that are very unique. And so we have a writer's group. And if you're a comic, this is something that I love to do. And the great thing about our writer's group is that we get to run jokes past each other. But because they're my peers, they're people who I respect, of course, I'm going to really work on the joke before I pitch it to them.
Right.
So I'd like you guys to hear just a little bit of our writing session. This is me pitching a new joke about wine connoisseurs.
Oh, nice.
To Brian Kiley and Dana Eagle. Take a listen.
I do not know anything about wine. In fact, these wine connoisseur people kind of drive me crazy because they're so into it and they're so specific about like breaking every single thing down, when to me I'm like, it's just alcohol. All of it's going to get you drunk. Like, it's just all going to get you there. Like, I went to Costco just to get some wine for the holidays, and you know, the guy's like, oh, well, what will you be eating this? I'm like, I don't. He's like, what do you want to pair it with? And I'm like, depression. It works.
Oh, that's funny.
I like that.
I have a suggestion.
Yeah.
Like, what if you're on a date with this guy who's like a huge wine snob?
Uh-huh.
And he's going, oh, you know, there's, I'm getting hints of vanilla with a little licorice. And I'm thinking, I'm getting hints of douchebag with notes of asshole or something.
You know yeah. I mean? Mm-hmm.
Oh, wait, going back to the one you had before, like, one way they describe wine is they'll be like, oh, it has a very earthy feel to it.
Yeah, it's earthy, which is good because I'm going to be passed out on my front lawn later.
Yeah, I like that. What are all they say? Earthy?
Yeah, you
vanilla, dry. Dry.
Yeah, I think going on a date with the wine snob.
Okay, date with the wine snob.
They say oaked, bright, charcoal, toasty. Yeah, you can just look it up. There's like a whole thing of snobby terms.
Okay. Date with a wine snob. With under, is it a thing where they say undertones? Like with hints
yeah,
of.
Yeah, you have the language, like undertones.
There's like hints of douchebag with a slight undertone of homosexuality, you know.
Right, yeah.
Slight tone. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, and I think they say notes of and hints of or that kind
tone.
Of
tone. Right. Okay.
Or even an aftertaste, maybe, or something.
Yeah, very dry.
Chewy, complex, creamy.
Yeah.
Which is coincidental because now I'm very dry.
I was gonna say,
yeah.
You'd be all over that.
Thank you guys so much for tuning in and for loving comedy as much as I do. I mean, I hope you do. I hope that you laughed during the podcast. I hope that you have a fantastic Christmas and holiday. And if you're depressed during this time, a lot of us are. Go to a comedy club. Yeah. Listen to other Find the Funny episodes and laugh. And you can also call in. If you're feeling depressed or you have some issues that you're dealing with, how do they do it?
They can go on to findthefunnypodcast.com, and there is a leave a voice memo button that you just push, use your phone or your computer microphone, and just leave a message. voicemail.
Awesome. Yes. And so we will play it on the show and I will do my best to take your circumstance and make it funny or hopefully help you laugh and help you heal a little bit from it.
Yeah.
I love you guys. Thank you, Sarah, for joining me.
Always fun.
Supporting me on this. She's the best. You guys are the best. Please subscribe on YouTube. Lisa Alvarado, comedian. It really does help. The more subscribers, I can actually start paying for this and not out of my own pocket. So right. It would be great to not be in debt every month. You guys, exactly. So just tune in. If you want to get me a Christmas present, and hey, my birthday's in January. So if you really want to get me a great present, subscribe.
Yep.
It's free. That's all you have to do. And then put me on in the background. Just press play and walk out of the room after you've listened to it, you know.
It's charming. It's fun to listen to Lisa and her jokes in the background. I do it all the time.
In the background. All right. Thank you guys for tuning in to Find the Funny. And we will see you in 2 weeks. Mwah. Love you guys. Thanks.
I hope everybody listen to my daughter and see it and laughing with her because she is very funny.